When it's time to scale your business, it's time for Shopify. Get everything you need to grow the way you want. Like, all the way. Stack more sales with the best converting checkout on the planet. Track your cha-chings from every channel, right in one spot. And turn real-time reporting into big-time opportunities. Take your business to a whole new level. Switch to Shopify. Start your free trial today.
Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Kubo. Today, I have a very special guest, Seth Jaffe. Seth, how are you doing today?
I'm groovy, man. You know, swell, gnarly, tubular, radical, bodacious, wicked, solid, whatever you prefer.
Yeah, I prefer all those. Anytime. Well, I appreciate you reaching out. I'm glad we could get you on today. I was glad I had you in the running there because on my sub list because I had somebody drop last minute, and as I was putting stuff together, and I was like, oh no, they're like, yeah, I'm going to be way behind. I'm like, if you're 6 months behind, I was like, I got to find somebody else. No offense. I told them I'd save them for season six. But yeah, I always look at genre, subgenre, try and intermix, you know, as much as we can. So that way it's not like fantasy, epic fantasy, fantasy, epic fantasy, or sci-fi. Sometimes things happen, right? But it's nice to get people a little varied in experience and story. So we appreciate that you could come and join us for season five at this point. So thank you so much for, you know, chatting with us, and we'll get to know you and your writing style and talk about your books and just having a nice chat today. So thank you so much for joining us.
Well, I'm so happy to be here. As I said, you're my first interview ever.
That's awesome.
This is a new experience for me, and I'm just thrilled to be here. Thanks for squeezing me in.
Yeah. Not a problem. So I'm going to start there with that first question. What has your writing journey been like up until this point?
I'd say it's kind of been in the shadows, right? I mean, oh, nice. I was the kid in the back of the class daydreaming. The teacher's like, So, yeah, you know, I wish they would have recognized that I like to create stories in my head and maybe developed that. But instead, it was always, Seth, you need to get back into class. You're never going to amount to anything unless you focus. Ooh. I had that type of upbringing, you know, private school, right? So anyway, I've spent my entire life going against maybe my natural talents. I was terrible in math. So I went and became an engineer. Not just any engineer, right? An aerospace engineer, which means wow. I have to take calculus 1, 2, 3, and vector calculus for fluid dynamics and orbital mechanics. So, you know, that was probably not the smartest move. But and then I don't have the best memory. And so what did I do? I became an attorney, which you kind of need to know the law and remember all. Is people going to see this? That's probably not the best thing to say. My boss is on the watch. No, but seriously, you know, the whole time I've been just kind of telling stories to myself. And I have been writing all the way through. I mean, I discovered boxes of stuff I've written in high school and in college that I don't even remember writing. But it was really just because I like to do it out in the forest and you know, for enjoyment. I never thought I would publish anything, or at least I never thought I would publish anything until I retired. But I don't know. I just decided with Amazon allowing you to self-publish and all these other companies doing this stuff, I was like, let me just try it. It's a lot of work, but it's been way more rewarding than I thought. You know, I didn't, and I also just, I expected to, you know, publish this thing, nobody reads it. And basically me just putting in those, what do you call those things? Lending libraries that people put. I'm just going to stuff them in there. But surprisingly, people are reading this book and it's doing pretty well. So, you know, I'm just thrilled. I'm over the moon.
Oh, that's awesome. I like the over the moon. We're going to talk about that later, right? Yeah,
I did do orbital mechanics for a while. So yeah, let's
That's awesome. That's super cool. Well, that's awesome. I totally get the wanting to stick all the paperbacks in. I have so many lending libraries near me.
I got my little book here, and I'm just like, okay, where are they? I'm just going to stuff them in there. It's kind of a costly thing to do, but it's worth it.
Yeah. No, totally. Well, that's awesome. I love how you said that, like in the shadows, because that's how I think, so, you know, because some people either do it, I think, or you know, that's kind of how it is, right? As a teacher, I cringe when I hear someone, because I've heard so many people say that. And I was very blessed that I did not hear that from, I went to private school too. I didn't hear that from teachers, but like where I was at, but like there's so many people that I've talked to from, you know, like my region and stuff at other schools. And I was like, what were people doing? Like, as an educator, like I look for my kids that like to do art. I have a kid right now is writing poems. I'm like, his first poem, it's pretty good. His last poem, holy moly. I was like, dude, we gotta publish this, even if you do it, you know, under, you know, a different name. I was like, but
I got
it's
lucky having
amazing,
you as
right?
a teacher because you know how to do that kind of thing.
I mean, I do podcasts, I do that. I used to like I was originally in art. So but it's like it's always interesting, I think, to see people that have skills, right? And I can't remember which like famous author I was listening to, but he was like, yeah, I was told by my English teacher I would never write a book or whatever or finish anything or whatever. And he was like dedicated his first one to him. I was like, I just thought
Oh,
that blew my
that's
mind though, you
poetic.
know, like
Yeah.
It was awesome. Brandon Sanderson actually has a professor too that was kind of interesting. Yeah, that and I thought that was kind of funny. So
Yeah, I've watched, you
that's
know,
what.
some of your guests have said the same thing, which is like they just kind of were writing for fun in the sun. And then others were like, well, I wrote my first story in high school and my teacher got it, and you know, they basically came out of the gate writing. I wonder sometimes what it would have been like had I had that. Whether I would have been a famous author or published a bunch of stuff by now. But at the same token, right? I mean, it's your life experiences that go into your books. And I've had seven careers in my life, and I've taken something from each one of those. You know, when you start with a new career, you start at the bottom. You got to climb your way up and learn all this stuff. Well, all of that kind of was born into my books. When beta readers who know me read it, they're like, oh, dude, I remember that night when that happened, and it's in the book now. And so, you
That's
know,
cool.
having all those experience, I think maybe makes the book a little bit better.
Oh yeah, I can't remember. Can't remember if it was Sanderson's BYU lectures or if it was Wizard Words and Words maybe, with that crew for their older podcast. But somebody was saying that though for one of the two, and they were like, "Yeah, like you know, it's not that you took 7 years to write a book; it's that you had 7 years worth of stuff to write about." So I think that makes total sense because I keep thinking to myself like I have a bunch of stuff started and I'm like I just got to start wrapping things up, right? But I'm like super tired at the end of the day. I have a 2.5-year-old and he's great, but man, like he has way more energy than me.
Yeah, it's a
You know, and
handful.
just to try and get everything in, you know, with work and everything, I'm like I'm just like exhausted lately. So I'm trying to give myself some grace, you know. But I guess for me, I'm like never wanted to be that retired person writing because I wanted to write more stuff. I've met a lot of authors that do that, and there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, I'm like, I want to, by the time I want to write so I can retire, you know, instead of like one of my friends, like, yeah, I waited till, you know, my kids are in college and stuff. I was like, that's a long time for me. That's like 16 years from, you know, 50 and a half years from now, or whatever. I was like, I can't do that. I was like, I got to be publishing, like, you know, a little bit ahead of time. So.
I think it's the mark of all destined writers to have a book or a set of outlines. Like I've got 12 books outlined already, you know, and they just keep
Oh, nice.
coming. I'm never going to get to that one. I, you know, working. But that's just, you know, because you're coming up with story ideas all the time, which tells me that this is what I was destined to be doing, right?
I like that. No, it's totally fair. I had a student earlier we were discussing. He's like, how's your novella coming? He's trying to keep me on track. I was like, I got sidetracked this week by a short story that I was excited about. I was like, I'm having trouble figuring a few things that I totally screwed up. I'm in the wrong year essentially. And then technology's different for me. So now I have to make some decisions, right? And then go through all the stuff I just rewrote and rewrite it. So I'm just like, it's a mental block, I feel like. But yeah, he's like, you can do this. Let's just write the short story and get out of your system and do that. He's like, I'm really looking forward to reading your book. I was like, dude, I was like, it's people like you that keep me going. So I think that's totally true. But I like the destined part. I'm a big Les Brown motivational speaker fan, so I'm gonna use that. So I really like that. So speaking of writing, what genre or genres do you currently write in, and why?
Well, I'm straight sci-fi for the most part. I've always been interested in sci-fi. I've always been interested in aeronautics, And you know, one of the reasons that I went the direction that I did. But I'm a futurist, I guess you'd say. I'm interested in futurism. And so it's just fun to think about what life is going to be like. And, you know, mostly I'm interested in hard science fiction. Because I don't know, it's just kind of interesting to see, can you take current physics and tell your story within the bounds of the current physics? I think it's a little harder sometimes to do it that way, but I find it to be more rewarding. So I generally write in hard science fiction, though I did do a middle grade, I guess you'd call it fantasy. It was kind of like a, you probably know the term, but it's not really fantasy. Like, there's no dragons, there's no swords. It was really about these kids in the forest looking at pareidolia in trees. Pareidolia, you know, or like when you see things in clouds. But in this case, they saw them in the trees. And so that was kind of a fun little project that I did. But everything else, time travel, teleportation, first contact, you know, that kind of stuff. Though my current project, it is sci-fi, but I wouldn't say it's hard sci-fi. It's well, I can't tell you really about it, but it's called The Dreamer. That's all I can say.
Oh, cool. I like surprises. So so does my audience. So that's really cool. I got to ask, have you read Andy Ware's Project Hail Mary?
Oh, yeah. I read it right when it came out. And, you know,
took me a while, but man, that was good.
I identified with him, you know, when The Martian came out, which I was like, finally.
That was a great book.
You know, because I understand a lot of the stuff. I mean, obviously, I worked at NASA for 15 years, so I understand a lot of the stuff in the book. And I'm like, yeah, he got that right. Missed that one. But, you know, the things he missed, they were tiny. They were small. Now, he had an army of people helping him.
Yeah.
You know, I would have definitely been in that mix with the orbital mechanics. You know, he had to do that free return trajectory.
Yeah.
And I know that he reached out to a couple of folks at NASA to help him with that, which I thought was really cool. But yeah, Project Hail Mary was awesome in the same regard. And I remember reading it kind of concurrently with a friend of mine who was another flight controller at NASA. And, you know, we were like, yeah, but if you do that, this might happen. And he's like, just wait for it. He was ahead of me. Wait for it. You know, so that was a lot of fun. I really like hard science fiction. And in The Receiver, I tried to do the same thing. Now, I was focused on quantum mechanics, quantum physics, which is not my primary area of expertise, right? But it's one of my hobbies. I just find quantum mechanics to be so strange and marvelous and wonderful because we really don't understand it as a community, as a species.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
but you know, I wanted to get the physics right, so I did a lot of research, read a lot of papers, watched a lot of YouTube videos to try to get it to work. There was one, you know, I don't want to give any spoilers, but there was one situation where I was doing something. I'm like, I can't do that at sea level. I need to go up higher, right? I mean, it's that kind of stuff. It's fun. So I had to rewrite the whole part of the book just to give it some elevation. It's cool stuff. I love hard science fiction.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm out to read anything, but I don't know. Like, yeah, when I read The Martian with my class last year, with my old co-teacher who's teaching English, and we did English and social studies, and we were doing like exploration of the new world, and that with juniors for U.S. history, and like really like what people. Like, what were the enduring issues, right, that we struggle with? So I love that in the, you know, Martian, like, they're talking about the money, right? Or they're talking about the technology, or they're talking about, you know, these people have these resources, we have these. But I also liked how he brought that up in Project Hail Mary, too, because he brings up a lot of AP Geo stuff, you know, a lot of political things, you know, for different reasons. But yeah, I was like, man, I really liked the way that I like the way he does hard sci-fi. I guess like he kind of got me with those two books like back into it because I had taken a break for a little bit. Unless it was like hard military sci-fi, I've still done quite a few of those. But yeah, I don't know. It was like kind of like a breath of fresh air because I used to be really into sci-fi. Where I back in the day, I didn't read really. I read a few fantasies and stuff, but not really. Like it was more like Star Wars, Star Trek, Sequest, Quantum Leap, like whatever I could find, right? Superhero stuff that was science fiction, like that was my jam until I discovered Forgotten Realms and Tolkien right before that, and I kind of went from there. But I was like, I don't know, it's kind of nice. It's kind of like coming home for like hard sci-fi. So it's cool.
If you like Andy Weir, I'm not going to do perfect too much of a plug, but if you look at my review, a lot of people on the reviews are like, if you love Andy Weir, you're going to love The Receiver. A lot of people said like The Martian, like Project Hail Mary. I mean, I couldn't pick a better couple of books to be compared to.
So yeah.
Pretty exciting. And that was kind of the vein that I was going for anyway. And I've been writing in that genre even before The Martian came out. I just try to, it's not just getting the physics right. It's also logic of the people, right? Why would do that? That's stupid. If you're screaming at the book or screaming at the movie screen, like, no, don't do that. Don't go into the shed. What's wrong with you, right? That's not my type of story, right? I want people to be competent.
Yeah. That's what I liked is that, like, yeah, he was like, I have this problem and I'm going to do this. And I think differently. So I liked that, right? It's like seeing how his characters were thinking about those problems and how they were going to solve them. So I thought that was like, it was just super interesting. And I liked that, like, Project Hail Mary was like that because I really enjoyed that about The Martian, but I actually liked the story more in Project Hail Mary, but it was still had like those same type of things that, you know, just like writing style and stuff. I was like, oh, this is cool, right? How this person is from their perspective and they have this issue. And then I could not figure out how he was like, going to solve his issues at all. And I love the way that the problems, I love seeing the problems too, I guess, was really cool. And then seeing how they use science or their knowledge of different mathematics or engineering to solve those problems. I was like, this is how you teach kids to love science and math, in my opinion, and engineering, you know,
not by giving them a science textbook, but by showing them how science actually improves their lives. You know, he actually used ALE in the Project Hail Mary. Don't ask me what that stands for, but I work at a biotech company and we do genetic engineering on microbes. We also use ALE, which is essentially stressing the microbes or the microorganisms so that they evolve to do what you want them to do. It's not genetic. You're not messing with their genes, but you're forcing them into it. And he actually used ALE in Project Hail Mary. I was like, yes.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, it was super cool. I forgot about that, actually. I know spoilers, like, I don't want to say too much because I know the movie's coming out and some people are going back around. And I was so glad my co-teacher last year, I was like, what should my buddy and I read? We're reading, like, got done with Words of Radiance. We were going to have Oathbringer. I was like, we needed a palate cleanser. We learned from Malzahn, Book of the Fall, right? Don't just keep reading these books. He was like, I think Project Hail Mary would be a good one. So I sent to my friend. He was like, yeah, let's do it. And neither one of us had ever read Andy's work before. So Artemis, I think, is going to, I had read The Martian, but I hadn't read like his, you know, like, I don't know. I know some people classify The Martian as particular type of sci-fi, right? Versus, you know, like Project Hail Mary, I would, you know, classify that as different sci-fi without doing spoilers. But yeah, like those were the other things I really liked about that. I was like, here you're taking the things I really enjoy, but then, you know, doing them with a story that brings other genres or subgenres in that I really enjoy. So yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. But then I was kind of looking, we were looking at like other things too. And yeah, like, I don't know, have you read Edward Ashton, like Mal Goes to War, and then Mickey 17 or whatever, Mickey 7? Those are going to be like on our list next. I actually just met an author recently that actually worked with Edward Ashton a while back. I thought that was so cool. Yeah, so those are going to be, my friend is just getting into sci-fi, so it was nice that we're like kind of finding more sci-fi. So
Mickey 17 was an Apple, or is on Apple. I can't remember.
The book was Mickey 7 before they changed it.
Well, it's very exciting that so many of these books are being made into movies. Like I was looking, I'm on the hard science fiction bestseller list in the top 20. It's so exciting. But I was looking where I was, and I was, you know, next to the Three-Body Problem, the Murderbot series. Neuromancer. I was in front of Neuromancer and Foundation, which was like the seminal one that I grew up with. All of these have been made into series. The Bobaverse. For a series, and I really hope that Dennis gets
it. Yeah, it was like 3 months ago, I think. Yeah, something like that.
Indie author.
It was pretty recent.
I am a huge pro indie author. I would like to see more interviewers interview indie authors and review indie authors. And so I'm always rah-rah indie. But because I you know, just it first of all, it's already hard enough to break into this field. I mean, I watched the Pierce Brown.
I have a story about him.
Yeah, I know you've met him, and that's an awesome story. I've heard your story on there. But
awesome.
He did a TikTok video the other day where he's like, I queried like 130, you know, for Red Rising, you know, and he's like,
wow,
crickets, you know, and then he's like, this is what I did. But, you know, everybody starts that way. And I queried a whole bunch of people on the receiver and on my other books, especially Quest Nights. It's kind of a funny story. I just got a rejection like a couple weeks ago. I queried this guy like over a year ago in the summer and, you know, never heard from him. And then, you know, suddenly he responds. He's like, sorry, I don't think that's a good fit for me. I was like, dude, did you even bother to Google it? I mean, it's number three on the Amazon bestseller list right now. You know, I'm selling 80 books a day. You know, he could have at least said, nice job with your book or something of the sort. But I just think these guys are so inundated with.
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to be a better way to do it, right? I mean, I can't imagine that they don't have time to just look at this stuff. It's tough. It's a tough world.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, and that's like, I have so many people, they're like, like when I had met Pierce, right, I went to this thing and it's like, I had just was like, I'm going to be traditionally published. And then when that was the first time I had met indie authors. And it's funny because like Kevin Heard was actually the first, indie and trad published author that I had met, the first hybrid publisher. And that's funny because then I'm pretty sure Brandon Sanderson did that, like, I can't remember if it was right after that, it was like Skyward or whatever. It had to have been like right after that. And like his the young adult series, right? The other one with like the kids at the end of the world or whatever. But it's funny because Kevin Hearn was actually the first hybrid author that I had met at that point. And then yeah, there was a bunch of indie authors there. And that like really one reason why I started this podcast, because I had met people there, not just Pierce, right? But it was like there's other people too, right? Like Michael J. Sullivan. He had three books out at that point, right? For his original series. And then there were other people too. The Django Wexler was still indie. And it's funny, right, to see like five years ago when I started this podcast, to see how far people had come in 8 years. And a lot of people were hybrid from there. So for me, it was really cool. It's like, oh, it'd be really neat to interview somebody like you now, right? And then 2 years from now, like, it's pretty cool. Krissa Broadbent, I always talk about her, but she's again Target now, and like, I mean, everybody searches for her now on my podcast because I interviewed her season one and she was awesome. But now it's like she's just selling, you know. And for me, that's like, maybe it's the teacher in me, but I think it's just so cool to see people be successful.
It makes perfect sense. Like, I think that every book reviewer, I want to put a rule out there that's like, hey, if you're a book reviewer and you review a Hugo or Nebula award-winning book, then you gotta review an indie book. So one Hugo book, indie book. And it makes perfect sense. Like in the investment world, you could go out and you can just buy Apple and Google and NVIDIA and whatnot and just hope that everything goes well. But there's a lot of investors that go out and they'll say, okay, let's go find those unicorns, those small little...
Travis Baldry.
Yeah, right. And so they'll go and they'll find those. And those are the ones that have the meteoric rise. So if you find an indie author and you promote an indie author and they make good, I mean, they're going to turn around and they're going to help you. And the same thing goes with other indie authors, right? I mean, I helped try to promote all my indie author friends. Maurice, who did Cello's Gate. You sure you've heard of
Cello's Gate? Oh, he's awesome. He was so fun. Yeah.
Well, he lives here in Nashville. You know, I'm like, we got to go get a beer. So
yeah.
Now, I'm a big fan of his work and his videos, and you know, I hope that he makes it big because, you know, he's going to turn around and help the little guys too, and just like I
would. Yeah. No, I totally agree. It's funny because I was like, oh, but when I started this podcast, everybody was asking for stuff, right? And there's nothing wrong with that, but it was like everybody, and I was just like, what can I do to be different? And my friend was like, you know, a lot of people, like you, you love podcasts, like. Wizards, Words, and Words. Like, I've had Michael R. Fletcher on here twice. I've had Dirk Ashton on. I've had Rob Hayes on before. I have not gotten their other original host, Jed Hearn, but I'd love to get him on. I've been trying. It's just been hard because he's in Australia. And now I have a child, so it's hard to stay up late. But, yeah, like, that was, like, I can't remember if it was, like, Mike or like Michael Fletcher or Rob, but one of them, or Jed, but one of them was like, well, you should just do this, right? Because I was always like responding and, you know, like in the Patreon for them or on Facebook or something, or asking questions when they would, you know, collect them and then be like, we're going to ask this author. So they're like, you should just do this. And I had a couple other people. So I was like, I'm going to do this. But it was like, it was so cool because at first I was like, well, I'll help people. And then one day I'll just, you know, I'll ask for stuff. And it's the hardest thing for me to do is to ask for stuff because I'm just so busy. It's just so fun helping people. It's hard for me now to be like, hey, please subscribe. Or, hey, can you share this? Or, hey, can you check out this book or whatever that I'm working on? Like, it's actually really hard. But I thought that was going to be like my mission, right? Was to build a platform to then help myself. But it actually totally changed to helping particularly indie authors. Like, I've had Trad on here. I've had Hybrid. I'll take anybody. I take creatives of, you know, any type as long as it's within the realm of fantasy, sci-fi, horror, book, comic, or movie or TV show. But or animation, board game, whatever. But it's interesting, right? To see, like, my wife's always joking with me. She's like, oh, you're going with your friends again, right? I'm like, yes, I am. Like, but it's like, it's our joke, right? Because this is really fun and it's become a community thing. My Facebook group's almost up to like 3,000 people. Yeah. And we have so many great creatives that are just fun. And no offense to anybody, but for me, like, indie's just fun. So,
yeah. Plus the appreciation. Like, I appreciate you so much for saying yes. You know, everybody else has just ghosted me.
Interesting.
So you said yes, and I'm never going to forget that. If I make it big, you know, you can guarantee you that you will have my cell phone number and can call me anytime you want.
I appreciate
that. That's the way it's supposed to be, right?
You know, yeah.
Don't forget about your big breaks. So I appreciate it.
That's wild that people aren't getting back to you though. Like, for me, like, and it took me a while to get back to some people from like the spring, because like I try to tell people, I was inundated. It was really tough for me at work, and it just was like I had a lot to do. I had multiple jobs over the summer because I'm a teacher, and we had some stuff fall through, and I'm not one of those people. I'm gonna go, no offense, but I'm not gonna go get another credit card. I'm just gonna go out and get another job. So that's basically what I did. I was actually working three jobs this summer, all around education. So that's why my writing kind of slowed down and stuff. But I got my season 4 out for the podcast, but that's where I was sending emails to people. I was like, I'm so sorry. I was like, I didn't even have time to sit down and email people to be like, it's going to be another couple months. Like, I wish I had an assistant, because I had like 500 emails, which was great. But, you know, I always make sure I respond to people. I had somebody from 2 years ago that, or a year and a half ago, that somehow I just got their email. It's like, I don't know what happened with Gmail. Like right before my son was born, I had a huge problem. So, but it was crazy. So I responded to them. They're like, I don't remember what this is about. And I was like, oh, it's this podcast, you know? And then the guy was like, oh yeah, I remember. So I actually got him scheduled now, because I was trying to get him scheduled for season 4, but I didn't have any drops. So, but I think that's crazy that people like aren't just at least saying, oh, no, I can't.
I'm probably not the best at doing this. Like, I watch a lot of YouTube videos, but this is a whole new world for me. And
I get that.
Talk to me about, you know, your Facebook page and all this stuff, because you've got to just assimilate so much information.
It's hard.
Like,
yeah.
Like the audiobook. I'm doing the audiobook for The Receiver right now. And I was out on Upwork. I was calling personal friends. I just learned that ACX has a marketplace and you can put out a couple pages and they will do auditions for you.
Yep.
How did I not know this? But that's the whole point, is there's so much information. I'm probably not reaching out to reviewers the right way. But, you know, I mean, I probably need to tell them it's a first contact science fiction book and all these things. But
your list was great, by the way. Just saying, your list right there, like, you hit so many great like points there with saying first contact. And that was like, that's how to sell it, in my opinion. I was like, oh, sweet.
Okay. Well, thanks. Yeah, I just have no idea what I'm doing. And I have no mentorship, right? It's just kind of me out here just kind of wandering around.
Well, that's a great thing about my podcast group, because I have so many people that have been doing this for a long time or are just in the thick of it. And it's just, it's been amazing, because I've learned a lot. And that's where, like, we have like Nick Snapes in there. He's awesome. Alan Chessman is always just super great. He'll help anybody. He's just fabulous. Okay. Paul Cudd is in there. Yeah. We have Ingrid Moon. She's amazing for sci-fi. I'll definitely have to hook you guys up. She's been just amazing contributor. So there's definitely some great people in there to help you out with whatever.
And I'm all about giving back too, right? I mean, when I learn something, what do they say? Learn, do, teach, right? I mean, I'm immediately going to turn around and try to help people. At NASA, I was, I started as a flight controller and I worked my way up to front room, and then eventually became kind of like an evaluator and a trainer. Mm. And used to create these courses and try to distill all the information of what I learned. And I loved teaching, man. I loved it. It would be something that I'd want to do if I had the opportunity to do it. I have tremendous respect for your field. But
for sure.
Anytime I can say, oh, I've got some knowledge, can I help somebody with it? I will certainly do that as well.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, we've talked about some craft and things like that and, you know, and business stuff, which is great. And I always love talking about that stuff, but I can just hear some of my frequent subscribers being like, we want to know what the receiver is about more in depth. Yeah. So we're going to talk about that one right now. So what is your book, The Receiver, about, and how'd you come up with this idea?
Yeah, I was hoping that I was dreading this question a little bit. I mean, I've already stated that it is a first contact book.
We're warmed up now.
But the problem is that there are so many twists and turns and surprises in this book that
it
makes it almost impossible for me to talk about without slinging spoilers all over the place.
Yeah.
Here's what I can tell you. There are three protagonists, all with their own story arc, but they kind of weave around and eventually will combine. I love that because in my mind, here are my favorite storytelling techniques, right? One is the reader's in the dark trying to figure out a secret. The second is, okay, now the reader knows the secret, but the characters don't know the secret. And the reader gets to root for the characters to figure it out. Come on, it's right in front of you. You can do it, right? And then the third one is the readers and the characters know the secret, but then you bring in a new main character. And now the student is the teacher, right? And a lot of people do the first one. Some people do the second one. Very few people do the third one, and they just screw it up. Like Stargate SG-1 is a perfect example. Remember when Daniel died? That's not really a spoiler because what's I see?
It's like it can't be because yeah. I'm 38. That's like 20 at least. Like
you haven't watched Stargate SG-1, dude. Come
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
So Daniel dies. And they bring in some new actor from the middle of nowhere, like, what? And then Jack retires, and they bring in some new actor. And both of them fail, right?
You gotta
find somebody and build them up through the story, and then bring them into their lead role, and the student becomes the teacher. So I wanted to you know, those are my favorite storytelling techniques. I'm like, I can do one. Could I do two? Yeah. Could I do three? So I did all three, right? My goal was to, by doing multiple storylines that meet, I've got the reader trying to figure out what each protagonist, Chandler Mirren, Rob Gibney, and Jack are trying to figure out. And then they start to reveal stuff, but the other characters, the other storylines, they don't know what the other ones did. And you get to watch them meet. And those are always great scenes. You're like, really? Well, here's my piece of the puzzle. Well, I was trying to figure out your piece of the puzzle. And so that's always some fun scenes. My three areas are Chandler Mirren, who is a disgraced particle physicist student at Caltech, gets kicked out of the program. He's got an idol, which is a deceased Nobel laureate, you know, and a basic Richard Feynman is kind of what I was going with that. And he goes to do a research project and in his journals discovers a hidden message. Something, what is,
oh, that's cool.
What is this Nobel laureate trying to teach me, trying to tell me? And there's this whole like treasure hunt almost, kind of like Da Vinci
Code
thing or National Treasure type thing of Chandler running around trying to figure out what this Nobel laureate, this dead Nobel laureate was trying to tell him. And then there's Dr. Bram Gibney, who is a data scientist. And this was cool. She had a grant to go tie together all of the neutrino detection facility data. Neutrino detection facilities are pretty interesting. You know, neutrinos are the ghost particle. They just go right through you. We got trillions of them going through you right now. But we have these detection facilities filled with ultra pure water. And every once in a while, you know, you get like a Cherkov radiation where the neutrino hits a particle in the ultra pure water, and you know it. You can see the resulting particles that get knocked out of it. We have all these sensors. In fact, one of the neutrino facilities, the Kamiokande, was in the Three Body Problem Netflix series in the first episode. Of course,
cool.
She jumped into the water. I'm like, no, because that's drain the whole tank, start all over again. But anyway, you know, so she ties all these things together and you can actually do neutrino vectoring. At least that was, you know, what we were just discovering when I wrote this back in 2018. And so I was like, well, if you can do neutrino vectoring, so she ties these all together, increases the significant digits, but she sees an anomaly. Something coming from somewhere. And you guys can guess what's going on. It's a first contact Neville after all. But the cool thing is, later, just like a year or two ago, they actually did tie a lot of them together and they built a picture of our cosmos with neutrinos using neutrino vectoring. And I was just like,
oh, I saw that. That was really cool.
2018. And then the third story arc is Jack, who is a military translator from, he's Persian. And he goes on this wild goose chase, chasing after basically the Iranians who were trying to build an antimatter weapon. And he's chasing them, but he's really chasing Chandler the entire time, but he just doesn't know it. And so it's this kind of cat and mouse game where Chandler doesn't even know he's being chased. And so obviously all three of them come together towards the end. And it's kind of a cool way that it worked. People have called it a slow burn a little bit, start slow, but it really becomes a page turner by like page 100. And people are like, you can't put it down after that. So it's kind of fun.
For me, no offense to anybody, that's sci-fi for me, like some of the greatest sci-fi, like no offense, Foundation does not start really rapid, Larry Niven's, whatever the ring or whatever it is, that one starts at a party and it's a little boring. Like I got to get back into it at some point. Like once I got through the first three chapters, like I started flying through, right before my son was born. But yeah, Old Man's War, right? John Scalzi, yeah. Like, I don't know. For me, like, it's like you got to get to at least like chapter three, if not four, depending on how long there.
I don't think it starts slow at all. But, we're living in a world of instant gratification. And each chapter, every single chapter in this book ends on a cliffhanger. I mean, I tried to make it like a Netflix series for that reason. And there's a lot of chapters because the chapters are super short. Because, again, we don't have... We can't sit down like we used to, instant gratification world that we're living in. So I wanted to make it that, okay, you can do a chapter in a few minutes. And then if you need to go do something else, you put it down and you're not in the middle of a chapter putting it down. But I think it starts pretty fast. Although again, in today's world where everything's got to happen immediately, people are calling it a little bit of a slow burn, but the reviews have been really good. And everybody says, it's rewarding at the end.
It's just so funny that you say that. Cause like, I was thinking that with like, granted, they're like the last episode of Daredevil Born Again. Like the last three, I was like, why are we doing this? Like, I wouldn't have gone that route. But up until that point, but it's like funny, right? With shows like that, it's like there's like the first three episodes, right? Andor two, right? And there's like different spots for season one where it's just like boom, 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 like a, like a roller coaster till you get up and then it's just bam, right? And I just don't think people really understand what rising and falling action is or what a climax is like. And it's like, they want that every episode, which is very hard to do when you're trying to tell particular stories. Right. And I think that some people now they go with the action, right. And they do stuff and it's like this, and then that's where it flops off at the end, because we didn't actually follow what a story arc is supposed to be with 10 episodes or whatever. And I think people are getting so used to, like you said, so used to that in print media or Kindle or whatever with books, where it's like, guys, it's a different media. It's the same as comics, right? Like a great arc in comics, right, is going to take a while. You're not going to get every issue, being the same, So I think it's interesting that way.
Well, I'm not classically trained, right? I was not an English major. I was an engineering major. And so a lot of the terminology, a lot of the training that I probably should have as an author, I don't have. I kind of just intuit it, right? And it seems to work. I mean, obviously it works because everybody seems to say good things about it. But I would like to, at some point, sit down and classically learn what a story arc is supposed to be and the different terminology associated with that kind of thing. Like I had, he was like, what sort of tropes did you focus on? I'm like, what's a trope? I had to, because I just don't know this kind of stuff. But, I know it is, I just don't know the terminology for it. So it was kind of fun to learn this stuff.
Well, it's I took a class, like a writing class early on, like creative writing or whatever, but it was interesting. Like the teacher, like we studied fables, mythology, like a bunch of different styles, right, of how to tell a story. That's the first time, other than learning it, that George Lucas used the hero's journey. That's the first place I actually studied the hero's journey. But it's always cool, I think, for like fables is like I'm actually taking some like the Pied Piper. And instead of him being like the villain, I'm actually going to tell you the story of how he was actually the hero, but just didn't take credit. But it's like, it's fun, right? Because I went back to some lessons that my professor taught me about fables in order to cut and dissect and, I don't know, make a new exciting story off of an old idea, an older tale. So, but it is like really helpful, I think, to study the hero's journey and to do different things, because I think it's not to do replicate, but to, you know, take some of those elements and recreate them into more unique ways. So,
well, I mean, everything, nothing's new, right? I mean, you can come up with a couple of new things.
The hero's journey is definitely not new.
taking the stuff that you see out there and packaging it together in a new way. And I think, you know, the hero's journey, sure, but villains, for me, I was like, shoot, I don't know how to write a villain. I don't know how to be a villain. I'm not a very evil person, I don't think. And so I'm like, what would a villain do? I had so much trouble with that in The Receiver, but I think I'm getting better at it. In The Dreamer, I've got a great villain, and people are going to hate her, really hate her. I mean, originally I didn't have a name for her. I called her Cruella, you know? I mean, it's that kind of
villain, right? Yeah,
I know. But all of these things, like I took stuff from other books, like War Games, one of my favorite movies. There was a scene in War Games where Matthew Broderick's character, I think David, gets trapped in a closet, gets locked in a closet at the government facility in a supply room, and he escapes using a pair of like pinch clamps and a tape recorder to defeat the keypad. And you really can do that. It's truly real. I was like, I love that scene.
Oh, that's cool.
I got to write that scene into The Receiver. Fortunately, I used to work designing security systems, you know, big, huge security systems for corporations and car dealerships. So I knew all sorts of ways to defeat security systems. So I was able to write that scene into my book. Or you remember that movie Heat? You know, with Al Pacino and Robert first time they were ever on screen together. And there was this great scene where Al Pacino, who was kind of like the cop, his life was falling apart. And you had Robert De Niro, who was the thief, but his life was just starting. Al Pacino comes in, flies in a helicopter, gets in a car, pulls over Robert De Niro, who rolls down his window. And you think, what's going to happen? And Al Pacino invites him for coffee. He's like, let's go get some coffee. And Robert De Niro's like, okay, I could do that. And so there's this scene in a coffee shop where they're just talking. They have tremendous respect for each other, even on the other side of the table, literally and figuratively. And I was like, I have got to write that scene into my book. And I did. There was a scene with Jack his nemesis, and they're sharing a beer in Berlin. Neither of them really understand what they're talking about because they don't know all the facts. So it was a very interesting scene. It was a lot of fun. And then, of course, I had to put Axel Foley in there from Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, yes.
I got too many friends. In fact, I was writing it for a friend of mine. I was like, dude, I just threw the scene in there for you. The scene where, you know, well, I'll just say banana in the tailpipe. I won't tell you, you know, I don't want to ruin it. But, you know, I love paying homage to scenes that I love in my own books.
Yeah. There's some great characters there. There is a book. I can't find it. It's driving me nuts. It's like, it looks just like the poster for War Games, but it's a science fiction novel. And I had bought it a while back, and it just looks so good. But my friend read it. I was like, how is this? He's like, this is a weird thing to say. He goes, but it's a science fiction novel written in the future, like War Games. It's like, God, it's like, I think it starts with an S. It's like strategy something. I don't remember. But yeah, it was like super, super good. And it's like so cool because the cover of the book looks very much like a more science fiction version, with more technology, like the original War Games poster.
If there are viewers who are younger who have not seen War Games, you need to stop.
Everybody needs to take film studies in high school.
Yeah, you need to go watch that movie. It holds up today, even though, you know, I mean, you know, Whopper has a terrible computerized voice, but it just holds up. The movie is good story.
Yeah, it was great. I used to watch all the time with my grandpa. So that was like one of my favorites back in the dark. That's really awesome.
Let's talk about world building, man. I mean, we got to talk about
it. I was going to say, yeah. So what did you focus on when it came to world building for the book?
Yeah, well, I kind of consider myself a futurist. My father and I, we love kind of talking about what the world's going to be like. He always, cool. he was so, he he always comes up with stuff. Even today, he's coming up with stuff. But he was great back in the day. Like he knew about the weather. He pitched the Weather Channel to whoever did the Weather Channel. He lived in Oklahoma and you know where Noah is. And CNN, he was like, it's going to be a news network. And he was just ahead of his time on that kind of stuff. And
that's
it kind
crazy.
Of instilled in me. And so I wanted to take my love for futurism and put that into the book. And so I developed it in kind of near future. And this was in 2018. So the cool thing is I get to kind of see, was I right and was I wrong? A lot of this stuff is already starting to come to pass. For example, Lensors are, you know, augmented reality glasses.
I just saw that.
In the book, they, you know, they're like glasses like this. Now, back in 2018, originally I called them oculars, but Oculus came out after I had written the book and I was like, oh, shoot, I got to change the name. I think Oculus was already there, but I hadn't heard about it because, you know, Meta or back then Facebook hadn't bought them yet. But once I found that, I had to. But, you know, I like to stop and think, okay, well, how is life really going to be? When I was young, cell phones were kind of coming out. And back then, it was, I mean, people didn't talk on the phone in the middle of the restaurant. You know, that was considered taboo, but now they do. So I was like, okay, if everybody has augmented reality glasses on, what is life going to be like? And so I came up with certain terminology like the chorus. You're on a plane, everybody is communicating with their augmented reality AI. And so they're just talking to no one. And it kind of sounds like ducks, you know, squawking because you know everybody's talking to their lens or doing stuff. And then, you know, they're moving their hands around, grabbing, because everything's real physics in the virtual world. Grabbing this, you know, and that kind of stuff. And then there's the spread, which is like the tour of lensers where you can daisy chain these lensers together and communicate off of the internet, which Chandler uses a lot in order to obscure, you know, where he is and what he's doing. And then I also have a scene where people would rent their, because there's tremendous processing power in these lensers. And so at night they have to charge them. Well, they just, you know, upload the processing to a bank and you could take a bank of lensors, like a million lensors, and have them do stuff. So there was that whole thing. I was trying to make it realistic.
That's cool.
And in the book, Chandler, you know, remember Rubik's Cube?
Oh yeah. Yeah. My students play with them all the time.
Well, right. But there's always those students who are like, I am going to conquer this no matter how hard. I was not one of those. I could not conquer the Rubik's Cube, but I remember the people who did. And I was like, I want Chandler to be that person, right? He just.
Oh, cool.
You know? And so he, you know, he didn't want to be like moving his arms around like this. And so we came up with a way to kind of do it just by moving his fingers. And there's actually a protocol called Jest2R, which is in existence now, but it's kind of dying out in the book. It dies out. But I have him perfect his own Jest2R to communicate with the lensers. And of course, he uses that in the book for special.
Oh, that's cool.
You want your heroes to have special talents. And that was one of the ones that I gave him. But it was fun because I, you know, as a privacy attorney, I was able to add privacy issues into the book.
Oh, that's cool.
And deal with that. Because when everybody has a camera, like what happens if you take a picture of a bunch of people? The way lensers work is if they see other lensers, they have to ask permission of all those people in order to actually give you the image.
Oh, wow.
And it's automatic. Cool. It automatically happens because they got near field technology. So I explain all that in the book, which is that's part of hard science fiction is you got to explain how things work, not just why things work.
Super cool. That's awesome.
I do self-driving transports in there.
Oh, neat.
And, you know, I mean, right now we're in a situation where self-driving cars look like cars, but eventually, like, why should they look like cars? And so in the book, you don't get in and, you know, open the door and sit facing forward. You jump into a pod on the side or the back or the front. And I had to think about, okay, how does that work? Well, you know, it has to have special lighting to tell you when we're about to brake this way or when we're about to take off that way. And the lighting tells you when you're closing, you know, getting close to your exit and all that kind of stuff. And there's LCD windows that obscure. And, you know, a lot of people are going to be like, well, wouldn't you get car sick? And I was like, yeah, but, you know, now, but when people get used to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
The reason I know that is because when I was at NASA, I got to fly on the KC-135, you know, the Vomit Comet.
Oh,
where you
yeah.
In the Gulf, and they do like 40 parabolas. So you get up to 40,000 feet, and then they come down at 45-degree angle, and you're suddenly weightless. And then the lights turn off, and you better put your feet on the ground as soon as possible, because then the pilot pulls up to 45 degrees, and suddenly you weigh twice as much. You weigh 150 pounds, now you weigh 300 pounds. You weigh 300 pounds, you weigh 600 pounds. So you do not want to fall on your head. But I was so worried about going on that thing that I was like, I need to prepare. So every day at work for like a month beforehand, I would get into a chair and I would spin it around and I'd move my head until I became nauseated. And then I'd sit there like, oh my God. And eventually though, it wore off. And now I don't get
car
sick. By the way, if you guys get car sick, if anybody listening gets car sick, that's how you solve that problem. So I think eventually in the future, when people are used to riding sideways or backways, that they're not going to be sick anymore.
Yeah. It's funny because I had my thyroid like had an issue several years ago. So I used to be like fine, right? I'd be like, oh, the release roller coasters are awesome. I can't do them anymore. even going like this in a plane just like makes me sick at this point. So, but I do miss it. I know my kid's gonna be a an enthusiast. So I told my wife, I was like, I'm gonna have to retrain myself how to like go on some of these things, because I could just tell
he's the way to do it. I just gave it to him.
That's really awesome. Well, I know we're winding down on time, but I want to ask you this question because I'm like really curious at what your answer is. And I've switched them up for everybody, but I've tried to keep them in within genre. So if you could use any science fiction technology, what would it be and why?
I don't know, man. I think teleportation is interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, think about like, oh, okay, I'm here. I need to go to work, but I don't want to live in, you know, Dallas, Texas or something. You know, I want to live up on a mountaintop somewhere else. You just pop in and go to work. And then, you know, you'd be in the south of France enjoying a glass of wine, or you're in Italy with the, but, you know, teleportation has its problems too. I wrote a teleportation book. I have this series called, I call it Perspective, which is like, okay, pick one science fiction thing and then talk about how it would actually work in real.
That's cool.
I did one on time travel. I did one on teleportation, a couple others, but in the teleportation one, right? First of all, when you blip out of existence, when you teleport, there's nothing there other than a vacuum. So all the air, you got 32 pounds, you know, per square inch, come flying in and claps. It's like really loud. So imagine if everybody's teleporting around, it would just be ridiculous.
Oh, wow.
Second thing is, it's kind of happening in inertial space, right? So if you teleport from here, you know, down the street, I think you're fine. But if you go to the other side of the world, well, you're upside down. What happens then? Okay. Right? You know, you're going to fall on your head. So in this book, like he had to figure out where he was going and what was the surface like there. Oh, okay, I'm 45 degrees, so I need to get in this position before I teleport myself. So teleportation could be problematic if you really think about it. I don't know. Another one, consciousness transfer.
Oh, that'd be cool.
You know, into a computer, but then you have the problems of emotion and feelings. So I don't know. That I love the thing about science fiction where you think about what would be awesome, and then you start thinking about what would not be awesome about it. And that's how I kind of write my books that way, which is like, sounds great in spirit, but then there's a lot of downsides to this. And engineering is all about give and take, trading, you know?
Yeah.
So I put that into my books.
Oh, that's cool. I was going to say, like, I thought the way that I'm blanking on his name, we were just talking about him the other day with another author on here, the dude that wrote Altered Carbon. I just thought, like, that was, like, so interesting with, like, the alien technology and stuff. I thought the show did a really good job, too. But, like, not the technology, but in the problems. Because I was like, yeah, you could just like somebody else could just pop into my body, right? If I didn't have consciousness and if they did it quick enough. So, it was like problems that the book and the show actually brought up, which I always find interesting, like Sequest. I read a book for Sequest, and like literally there was global warming, and because of that, right, like and then they were like exploring like, oh, how the tectonic plates were shifting, and I was like, which fault line it was, whatever, but like because of that and something that somebody did on the surface for construction or whatever, and mining, it actually like opened up even more, and that chasm had like a gigantic like beast, like whatever, come out, like aquatic beast. And essentially like they had to figure out like how to stop it. And I was like, that to me, that was really cool as a kid. Cause I was like, here. And then when in my class, I brought that up, and my teacher, instead of just being like, oh, that's a silly sci-fi book, my science teacher and my English teacher combined to explain to us like what type of real life problems were in the book. And I thought that was so cool. So for me, like after that, sci-fi got even cooler, because I was like, there's real, you know, there's real problems here that need to get solved. And then to see things like, you know, get created after that, you know, or people now going for some of those ideas like Minority Report, where he's doing things. It's just crazy. Like, it's really cool.
Science fiction authors not only have to do a story, but they also have to create a world that is realistic. And that's why I love science fiction so much, because they're doing double duty. It's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree. It's awesome. Well, book sounds great. Can't wait. I just want to remind people that you can find The Receiver. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, I'm so sorry. We got to make sure we get this in, because we discussed this through our email. So can you tell me a little bit about the certification you got for your book? So sorry.
So no worries. So this is an AI-free certification, and I got it for The Receiver. What that is a badge, a certification badge that allows me to showcase that my book, every single word in my book was written without the use of AI. And I think that's important these days, because, you know, we're at the cusp where people are going to be like, I got an idea for a book. I'm going to plug it into ChatGPT and I'm going to have a book out there. And then they just post it. And we're out here, us authors are trying to write this stuff. It takes a lot of time, and we don't, you know, AI. So, I mean, we can't stop it, but, and I'm pro AI. Look, don't get me wrong. I'm pro AI, but I want to also showcase when I do something without AI. And so for other authors on here, I happen to be, you know, full disclosure, one of the founders of the AI Free Certification Project, which was created to kind of help artists, not just authors, but musicians and movie makers, showcase their human ingenuity. So I am happy to give your listeners some free certificates. Like, I can give you a bank of 50 or something. You can put it on there on the site if you're
oh, interested. Cool. I just know in our Facebook group, I know so many people.
Yeah,
I hadn't heard of it. I thought that was so cool. So
yeah. The other thing I wanted to say is that in this book, so I'm a huge Star Trek fan, There are two Star Trek Next Generation Easter eggs in this book. I haven't told anybody about them yet. This is the first time I'm disclosing it. But if the first person who figures them out correctly tells me them, I am going to write that person into the book, into the sequel.
Oh,
there's a sequel
cool.
coming out. And yes, there is a sequel coming out. If you look at my reviews, they're about 80% of the people say, please write the sequel. I can't wait for the sequel. So I'm definitely going to do a sequel. But here's the offer. If you can figure out the two Easter eggs, I will write you into the book, or I'll, you know, whatever you want me to do with respect to the character and whatnot. I'm going to figure out a way to get it in there. So, sequel's coming out. Audiobook is coming out. My next book is called The Dreamer, which is, I'd love to tell you about it, but it's such a cool little thing. I'm just going to hold on to it for a second. Mm. But yeah, thanks. That's the big news for me right now.
Awesome. Sweet. I'm glad you mentioned the Star Trek Next Generation one. I was just about to ask about that one again. So awesome. This is why I got to incorporate the questions, because otherwise I'm just like subsetting questions and thoughts and stuff as we get going. It's the only problem about having a conversation, I think, versus I've had a lot of people say, oh, I really like the style and format. And I've had a lot of authors, creatives say that too. But that's great. But yeah, I keep thinking to myself, like, if I don't take notes or, you know, have it somewhere. I just forget, because I'm just having fun on what we're saying. But that sounds awesome. I just want to remind our audience that you can find Seth's book and social links in the description anywhere where you're watching or listening to this podcast, whether it's visual audio. And just make sure that, you know, we're really focusing on reviewing those products. We've talked about the importance of that over and over again. If this is your first time watching one of my podcasts, we're really going to talk about that really throughout all of season 5, 4, 4 and 3, because that helps not just traditionally published authors, but in indie especially, but also everybody in between, whether it's copy editors, developmental editors, whoever, right? Cover artists, all those people. So help everybody out, and then you'll get more books from Seth, and they'll be really cool. Seth, thank you so much for coming on. This was great. It was hard for me to stay focused because you said way too many cool things. So I wanted to make sure I wasn't interrupting you too much, but I was like, oh, that's neat. Oh, that's super cool. But yeah, I'd love to have you back. You know, I always give alumni of the podcast free reign to save slots and stuff like that. Or I'll always do bonus. I think this year I might have to do like 5 bonus episodes, which is actually totally fine for the audience and for myself and for those people. Cool, so yeah, just let me know. And yeah, we'll get everything situated for you. If you want a spot in season 6 or something, once you have the sequel done or near done, just let me know and we can get something set up for you. Like I said, before we get recording, I'll send you the rest of the information. But other than that, my friend, I appreciate it. And, you know, good luck with writing the sequel. And if there's anything else you need in the meantime, just let me know and we'll get it done for you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
No problem.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. You were awesome. Yeah, keep it up. If you want anybody else, let me know. I can send you some names and hook you up with some other people. So you had a lot of cool things. I think a lot of people, you know, that would watch or listen to their channels would love, you know, this story. So it'd be great to get you out there and to get the book out there. So just email me and I'll get you set up with some of them. So.
Oh, yeah. I would, if you can, you know, just plug me on an interview, that would be huge, huge, huge. And
yeah. I'll see. I know already, I did. I said a couple people, but yeah, I can. I can ask who else is free.
Rolodex, so. As my awesome. First interviewer. So if I'm awesome. Big, you know, and you know, nothing, you'll have my awesome. Number, no doubt about it.
That's awesome. I love being people's first. And some people like get kind of weird about that. I'm like, I'm not. I'm like, they don't realize how many times I've flown this plane, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm used to it. I can get anything out of anybody at this point. I feel like I'm a teacher too. So it's like that quiet kid, like eventually they're going to say something. So it's always really fun to get people on. And like I said, it's fun to interview people a second time or to see you guys on other podcasts too. Yeah, it's awesome to see how people grow, not just in the books, but also, you know, how they're handling the industry and stuff. So for me, that's really cool. So, but yeah, I'll send you some names and yeah, we can get you hooked
okay.
up.
Okay, be great. Hey, by the way, just, I don't know if you noticed this, but like when I search for you on YouTube, I assume we're not really recording anymore, right?
Oh, actually, if you want, I can pause the recording so that way we can chat. So I just want to thank the audience again for coming and, you know, make sure you head to Seth's description down there so you can click on all his book and social links. But other than that, you guys have a great rest of the day and we'll see you soon. Thanks, guys. Bye.